True. The usual thing. I blinked. That was exactly what I'd been about to do. But... A waste of breath, waste of time, waste of a fine afternoon, he said. I don't like to see prisoners mistreated, but that's as far as my interest goes.
You...
He shook his head. And I'm notoriously immune to tales of woe, so... Unless your story involves a talking dog, I don't want to hear it.
Does it?
Does it what?
Involve a talking dog?
No, I snapped. It involves the future of a kingdom and everyone in it.
A pity, he said,
and took me by the arm, leading me to the aft hatch.
I thought you worked for Ravka, I said angrily. I work for the fattest purse.
So you'd sell your country to the Darkling for a little gold?
No, for a lot of gold, he said.
I assure you I don't come cheap.
He gestured to the hatch. After you.
With Sturmhan's help, I made it back down to my cabin, where two Grisha guards were waiting to lock me inside. The captain bowed and left me without another word. I sat down on my bunk, resting my head in my hands. Sturmhan could play the fool all he wanted. I knew he'd been in my cabin, and there had to be a reason. Or maybe I was just grasping at any little bit of hope.
When Jenya brought me my dinner tray, she found me curled up on my bunk, facing the wall.
You should eat, she said.
Leave me alone.
Sulking gives you wrinkles.
Well, lying gives you warts, I said sourly. She laughed, then entered and set down the tray. She crossed to the side scuttle and glanced at her reflection in the glass.
Maybe I should go blonde, she said. Corporal Kai Red clashes horribly with my hair. I cast a glance over my shoulder.
You know you could wear baked mud and outshine every girl on two continents.
True,
she said with a grin. I didn't return her smile. She sighed and studied the toes of her boots.
I missed you, she said.
I was surprised at how much those words hurt. I'd missed her, too, and I'd felt like a fool for it.
Were you ever my friend? I asked.
She sat down at the edge of the bunk.
Would it make a difference?
I'd like to know just how stupid I've been.
I loved being your friend, Alina. But I'm not sorry for what I did.
And what the Darkling did? Are you sorry for that?
I know you think he's a monster, but he's trying to do what's right for Ravka. For all of us.
I shoved up to my elbows. I'd lived with the knowledge of the Darkling's lies so long that it was easy to forget how few people knew what he really was.
Jenya. He created the fold. The Black Heretic.
There is no Black Heretic, I said, revealing the truth that Vagra had laid out before me months ago at the Little Palace. He blamed his ancestor for the fold, but there's only ever been one Darkling, and all he cares about is power.
That's impossible. The Darkling has spent his life trying to free Ravka from the fold.
How can you say that after what he did to Novokrebirsk? The Darkling had used the power of the Unsee to destroy an entire town, a show of strength meant to cow his enemies and mark the start of his rule. And I'd made it possible.
I know there was an incident.
An incident? He killed hundreds of people, maybe thousands.
And what about the people on the skiff?
She said quietly. I drew in a sharp breath and lay back. For a long moment, I studied the planks above me. I didn't want to ask, but I knew I was going to. The question had haunted me over long weeks and miles of ocean. Were there other survivors?
Besides Ivan and the Darkling?
I nodded, waiting.
Two and Ferny, who helped them escape.
She said.
A few soldiers from the First Army made it back, and a squaller named Natalia got out.
but she died of her injuries a few days later. I closed my eyes. How many people had been aboard that sand skiff? 30? 40? I felt sick. I could hear the screams, the howls of the Volcra. I could smell the gunpowder and blood. I'd sacrificed those people for Mal's life, for my freedom, and in the end they died for nothing. We were back in the Darkling's grasp, and he was more powerful than ever. Jenya laid her hand over mine.
You did what you had to, Alina.
I let out a harsh bark of laughter and yanked my hand away. Is that what the Darkling tells you, Jenya? Does that make it easier?
Not really, no.
She looked down at her lap, pleating and unpleating the folds of her kefta.
He freed me, Alina, she said. What am I supposed to do? Run back to the palace? Back to the king?
She gave a fierce shake of her head.
No, I made my choice.
What about the other Grisha? I asked. They can't all have sided with the Darkling. How many of them stayed in Ravka?
Jenya stiffened. I don't think I'm supposed to talk about that with you.
Jenya!
Eat, Alina. Try to get some rest. We'll be in the ice soon.
The ice? Then we weren't headed back to Ravka. We must be traveling north. She stood up and brushed the dust of her kefta. She might joke about the color, but I knew how much it meant to her. It proved she was really a Grisha, protected, favored, a servant no more. I remembered the mysterious illness that had weakened the king just before the Darkling's coup. Jenya had been one of the few Grisha with access to the royal family. She'd used that access to earn the right to wear red.
Jenya,
I said as she reached the door.
One more question.
She paused, her hand on the latch. It seemed so unimportant, so silly to mention it after all this time, but it was something that had bothered me for a long while. The letters I wrote to Mal back at the little palace. He said he never got them. She didn't turn back to me, but I saw her shoulders sag.
They were never sent, she whispered. The Darkling said you needed to leave your old life behind.
She closed the door, and I heard the bolt click home. All those hours spent talking and laughing with Jenya, drinking tea and trying on dresses, she'd been lying to me the whole time. The worst part about it was that the Darkling had been right. If I'd kept clinging to Mal in the memory of the love I had for him, I might never have mastered my power. But Jenya didn't know that. She had just followed orders and let my heart break. I didn't know what that was, but it wasn't friendship. I turned onto my side, feeling the gentle roll of the ship beneath me. Was this what it was like to be rocked to sleep in a mother's arms? I couldn't remember. Anakuya used to hum sometimes under her breath as she went about turning down the lamps and closing up the dormitories at Karemzin for the night. That was the closest Mal and I had ever come to a lullaby. Somewhere above, I heard a sailor shout something over the wind. The bell rang to signal the change of the watch. We're alive, I reminded myself. We escaped from him before. We can do it again. But it was no good, and finally I gave in and let the tears come. Sturmhand was bought and paid for. Jenya had chosen the Darkling. Mal and I were alone as we'd always been, without friends or allies, surrounded by nothing but pitiless sea. This time, even if we escaped, there was nowhere to run. Chapter 3 Less than a week later, I spotted the first ice floes. We were far north, where the sea darkened and ice bloomed from its depths in perilous spikes. Though it was early summer, the wind bit into our skin. In the morning, the ropes were hard with frost. I spent hours pacing my cabin and staring out at the endless sea. Each morning, I was brought above deck, where I was given a chance to stretch my legs and see Mal from afar. Always, the Darkling stood by the railing, scanning the horizon, searching for something. Sturmhand and his crew kept their distance. On the seventh day, we passed between two slate stone islands that I recognized from my time as a mapmaker. Jelka and Vilki, the Fork and Knife. We had entered the Bone Road, the long stretch of black water where countless ships had wrecked on the nameless islands that appeared and disappeared in its mists. On maps, it was marked by sailors' skulls, wide-mouth monsters, mermaids with ice-white hair, and the deep black eyes of seals. Only the most experienced Fjärden hunters came here, seeking skins and furs, chancing death to claim rich prizes. But what prize did we seek? Sturmhand ordered the sails trimmed and our pace slowed as we drifted through the mist. An uneasy silence blanketed the ship. I studied the whalers' longboats, the racks of harpoons tipped in Grisha steel. It wasn't hard to guess what they were for. The Darkling was after some kind of amplifier. I surveyed the ranks of Grisha and wondered who might be singled out for another of the Darkling's gifts. But a terrible suspicion had taken root inside me. "It's madness," I told myself. "He wouldn't dare attempt it." The thought brought me little comfort. He always dared. The next day, the Darkling ordered me brought to him. "Who is it for?" I asked as Ivan deposited me by the starboard rail. The Darkling just stared out into the waves. I considered shoving him over the railing. Sure, he was hundreds of years old, but could he swim? "Tell me you're not contemplating what I think you are," I said. "Tell me the amplifier is for some other stupid, gullible girl. Someone less stubborn, less selfish, less hungry for the life of a mouse." "Believe me," he said, "I wish I could." I felt sick.
"A Grisha can have only one amplifier. You told me that yourself."
"Moritzova's amplifiers are different." I gaped at him.
"There's another like the stag?"
"They were meant to be used together, Alina. They are unique, just as we are."
I thought of the books I'd read on Grisha theory. Every one of them had said the same thing. Grisha power was not meant to be limitless. It had to be held in check. "No," I said, "I don't want this. I want..."
"You want?" the Darkling mocked. "I want to watch your tracker die slowly, with my knife in his heart. I want to let the sea swallow you both. But our fates are entwined now, Alina, and there's nothing either of us can do about that."
"You're mad."
"I know it pleases you to think so," he said, "but the amplifiers must be brought together, if we have any hope of controlling the fold."
"You can't control the fold. It has to be destroyed."
"Careful, Alina," he said with a slight smile. "I've had the same thought about you."
He gestured to Ivan, who was waiting a respectful distance away.
"Bring me the boy."
My heart leapt into my throat. "Wait," I said. "You told me you wouldn't hurt him." He ignored me. Like a fool, I looked around, as if anyone on this saint's forsaken ship would hear my appeal. Sturmhand stood by the wheel, watching us, his face impassive. I snatched at the Darkling's sleeve. "We had a deal. I haven't done anything. You said..." The Darkling looked at me with cool quartz eyes, and the words died on my lips. A moment later, Ivan appeared with Mal in tow and steered him over to the rail. He stood before us, squinting in the sunlight, hands bound. It was the closest we'd been in weeks. Though he looked tired and pale, he appeared unharmed. I saw the question in his wary expression, but I had no answer.
"All right, Tracker," the Darkling said. track. Mal glanced from the Darkling to me and back again.
Track what? We're in the middle of the ocean.
Alina once told me that you could make rabbits out of rocks. I questioned the crew of the Verhader myself, and they claim that you're just as capable at sea. They seem to think you could make some lucky captain very rich with your expertise.
Mal frowned. You want me to hunt whales?
No, said the Darkling. I want you to hunt the Sea Whip.
We stared at him in shock. I almost laughed. You're looking for a dragon?
Mal said incredulously. The Ice Dragon, said the Darkling. Rusalia.
Rusalia. In the stories, the Sea Whip was a cursed prince, forced to take the form of a sea serpent and guard the frigid waters of the Bone Road. That was Morozova's second amplifier?
It's a fairy tale, Mal said, voicing my own thoughts. A children's story. It doesn't actually exist.
There have been sightings of the Sea Whip in these waters for years, said the Darkling.
Along with mermaids and white selkies. It's a myth.
The Darkling arched a brow.
Like the stag.
Mal glanced at me. I gave an infinitesimal shake of my head. Whatever the Darkling was doing, we weren't going to help. Mal peered out at the waves.
I wouldn't even know where to start. For her sake, I hope that's not true.
The Darkling pulled a slender knife from the folds of his kefta.
Because every day we don't find the Sea Whip,
I'll peel away a piece of her skin. Slowly. Then Ivan will heal her. And the next day, we'll do it all over again. I felt the blood drain from my face.
You won't hurt her, Mal said, but I could hear the fear in his voice.
I don't want to hurt her, said the Darkling. I want you to do as I ask.
It took me months to find the stag, Mal said desperately. I still don't know how we did it.
Sturmhan stepped forward. I'd been so focused on Mal and the Darkling, I'd nearly forgotten him.
I won't have a girl tortured on my ship, he said.
The Darkling turned his cold gaze on the privateer.
You work for me, Sturmhan. You'll do your job, or getting paid will be the least of your worries.
An ugly ripple of disquiet passed over the ship. Sturmhan's crew were sizing up the Grisha, and their expressions were not friendly. Jenya had a hand pressed over her mouth, but she did not say a word.
Give the tracker some time, Sturmhan said quietly. A week. At least a few days.
The Darkling slid his fingers up my arm, pushing back my sleeve to reveal bare white flesh.
Shall I start with her arm?
He asked. He dropped the sleeve, then brushed his knuckles over my cheek.
Or with her face.
He nodded to Ivan.
Hold her.
Ivan clasped the back of my head. The Darkling lifted the knife. I saw it glittering from the corner of my eye. I tried to cringe back, but Ivan held me in place. The blade met my cheek. I sucked in a frightened breath.
Stop!
Mal shouted. The Darkling waited.
I can do it.
Mal, no, I said with more courage than I felt. Mal swallowed and said,
tack southwest, back the way we came.
I stayed very still. Had he seen something, or was he just trying to keep me from getting hurt? The Darkling cocked his head to one side and studied him.
I think you know better than to play games with me, Tracker.
Mal gave a sharp nod.
I can do it. I can find it. Just give me time. The Darkling sheathed his knife. I exhaled slowly and tried to suppress a shiver.
"You have a week,"
he said, turning away and disappearing into the hatch. "Bring her," he called to Ivan. "Mal," I began as Ivan grasped my arm. Mal lifted his bound hands, reaching for me. His fingers grazed mine briefly. Then Ivan was hauling me back toward the hatch. My mind was racing as we descended into the dank belly of the ship. I stumbled along behind Ivan, trying to make sense of everything that had just happened. The Darkling had said that he wouldn't harm Mal as long as he needed him. I'd assumed he'd just meant to use him to keep me in line, but now it was clear there was more to it than that. Did Mal really think he could find the Sea Whip? Or was he stalling for time? I wasn't sure what I wanted to be true. I didn't savor the idea of being tortured, but what if we did find the Ice Dragon? What would a second amplifier mean? Ivan pulled me into the spacious cabin that looked like the captain's quarters. Sturmhand must have been squeezed in with the rest of his crew. A bed was pushed into one corner, and the deeply curved aft wall was studded with a row of thick-paned windows. They shed watery light on a desk behind which the Darkling seated himself. Ivan bowed and darted from the room, closing the door behind him. "He can't wait to get away from you," I said, hovering by the door. "He's afraid of what you've become. They all are."
"Do you fear me, Alina?"
"That's what you want, isn't it?" The Darkling shrugged.
"Fear is a powerful ally," he said. "And loyal."
He was watching me in that cold, assessing way that always made me feel as if he were reading me like words on a page. His fingers moving over the text, gleaning some secret knowledge that I could only guess at. I tried not to fidget, but the irons at my wrists chafed.
"I'd like to free you," he said quietly.
"Free me, flay me, so many options." I could still feel the press of his knife at my cheek. He sighed.
"It was a threat, Alina. It accomplished what it needed to."
"So you wouldn't have cut me?"
"I didn't say that."
His voice was pleasant and matter-of-fact, as always. He might have been threatening to carve me up or ordering his dinner. In the dim light, I could just make out the fine traces of his scars. I knew I should stay quiet, force him to speak first, but my curiosity was too great.
"How did you survive?"
He ran his hand over the sharp line of his jaw.
"It seems the Volcra did not care for the taste of my flesh," he said, almost idly. "Have you ever noticed that they do not feed on each other?"
I shuddered. They were his creations, just like the thing that had buried its teeth in my shoulder. The skin there still pulsed.
"Like calls to like." "It's not an experience I'd care to repeat. I've had my fill of the Volcra's mercy."
"And yours?"
I crossed the room, coming to stand before the desk.
"Then why give me a second amplifier?" I asked desperately, grasping for an argument that would somehow make him see sense. "In case you've forgotten, I tried to kill you."
"And failed."
"Here's to second chances. Why make me stronger?"
Again he shrugged.
"Without Morozova's amplifiers, Ravka is lost. You were meant to have them, just as I was meant to rule. It can be no other way."
"How convenient for you." He leaned back and folded his arms.
"You have been anything but convenient, Alina."
"You can't combine amplifiers. All the books say the same thing."
"Not all the books."
I wanted to scream in frustration.
"Bagra warned me. She said you were arrogant, blinded by ambition."
"Did she now?"
His voice was ice.
"And what other treason did she whisper in your ear?"
That she loved you, I said angrily. That she believed you could be redeemed.
He looked away then, but not before I saw the flash of pain on his face. What had he done to her, and what had it cost him?
Redemption, he murmured. Salvation. Penance. My mother's quaint ideas. Perhaps I should have paid closer attention.
He reached into the desk and drew out a slender red volume. As he held it up, light glistened off the gold lettering on its cover.
Istori Sanctia. Do you know what this is?
I frowned. The lives of saints. A dim memory came back to me. The apparat had given me a copy months ago at the little palace. I'd thrown it in the drawer of my dressing table and never spared it another thought. It's a children's book, I said.
Have you read it?
No, I admitted, suddenly wishing I had. The Darkling was watching me too closely. What could be so important about an old collection of religious drawings?
Superstition, he said, glancing down at the cover. Peasant propaganda. Or, so I thought, Morozova was a strange man. He was a bit like you, drawn to the ordinary and the weak.
Mal isn't weak.
He's gifted, I grant you, but no Grisha. He can never be your equal.
He's my equal and more, I spat. The Darkling shook his head. If I hadn't known better, I might have mistaken the look on his face for pity.
You think you've found a family with him. You think you've found a future, but you will grow powerful, and he will grow old. He will live his short Otkazatsia life, and you will watch him die.
Shut up! He smiled.
Go on. Stamp your foot. Fight your true nature. All the while your country suffers.
Because of you!
Because I put my trust in a girl who cannot stand the thought of her own potential.
He rose and rounded the desk. Despite my anger, I took a step back, banging into the chair behind me.
I know what you feel when you're with the tracker, he said.
I doubt that. He gave a dismissive wave.
No, not the absurd pining you've yet to outgrow. I know the truth in your heart, the loneliness, the growing knowledge of your own difference.
He leaned in closer.
The ache of it.
I tried to hide the shock of recognition that went through me. I don't know what you're talking about, I said. But the words sounded false to my ears.
It will never fade, Alina. It will only grow worse, no matter how many scarves you hide behind or what lies you tell, no matter how far or how fast you run.
I tried to turn away, but he reached out and took hold of my chin, forcing me to look at him. He was so close I could feel his breath.
There are no others like us, Alina, he whispered. And there never will be.
I lurched away from him, knocking the chair over, nearly losing my balance. I pounded on the door with my iron-bound fists, calling to Ivan as the Darkling looked on. He didn't come until the Darkling gave the order. Dimly, I registered Ivan's hand at my back. The stench of the corridor, a sailor letting us pass, then the quiet of my narrow cabin. The door locking behind me, the bunk, the scratching of rough fabric as I pressed my face into the covers, trembling, trying to drive the Darkling's words from my head. Mal's death. The long life before me. The pain of otherness that would never ease. Each fear sank into me, a barbed talon burrowing deep into my heart.
I knew he was a practiced liar. He could fake any emotion, play on any human failing. But I couldn't deny what I'd felt in Novi Zem, or the truth of what the Darkling had shown me. My own sadness, my own longing, reflected back to me in his bleak gray eyes. The mood had changed aboard the whaler. The crew had grown restless and watchful, the slight to their captain still fresh in their minds. The Gratia muttered amongst themselves, their nerves worn thin by our slow progress through the waters of the Bone Road. Each day, the Darkling had me brought above deck to stand beside him at the prow. Mal was kept well guarded at the other end of the ship. Sometimes I heard him call out bearings to Sturmhund, or saw him gesture to what looked like deep scratches just above the waterline on the large ice shelves we passed. I peered at the rough grooves. They might be claw marks, they might be nothing at all. Still, I'd seen what Mal was capable of in Sabaea. When we were tracking the sag, he had shown me broken branches, trampled grass, signs that seemed obvious once he pointed them out, but that had been invisible moments before. The crewmen seemed skeptical. The Gratia were outright contemptuous. At dusk, when another day had come and gone, the Darkling would parade me across the deck and down through the hatch directly in front of Mal. We weren't permitted to speak. I tried to hold his gaze, to tell him silently that I was all right, but I could see his fury and desperation growing, and I was powerless to reassure him. Once, when I stumbled by the hatch, the Darkling caught me up against himself. He might have let me go, but he lingered, and before I could pull away, he let his hand graze the small of my back. Mal surged forward, and it was only the grip of his Gratia guards that kept him from charging the Darkling. 3 more days, Tracker. Leave her alone, Mal snarled. I've kept my end of the bargain. She's still unharmed, but perhaps that isn't what you fear. Mal looked frayed to the point of snapping. His face was pale, his mouth a taut line. The muscles of his forearms knotted as he strained against his bonds. I couldn't bear it. I'm fine, I said softly, risking the Darkling's knife. He can't hurt me. It was a lie, but it felt good on my lips. The Darkling looked from me to Mal, and I glimpsed that bleak, yawning fissure within him. Don't worry, Tracker. You'll know when our deal is up. He shoved me below decks, but not before I heard his parting words to Mal. I'll be certain you hear it when I make her scream. The week wore on, and on the 6th day, Jenya woke me early. As I gathered my wits, I realized it was barely dawn. Fear sliced through me. Maybe the Darkling had decided to cut short my reprieve and make good on his threats. But Jenya was beaming. He found something, she crowed, bouncing on the soles of her feet, practically dancing as she helped me from the bunk. The Tracker says we're close. His name is Mal, I muttered, pulling away from her. I ignored her stricken look. Can it be true? I wondered as Jenya led me above. Or did Mal simply hope to buy me more time? We emerged into the dim gray light of early morning. The deck was crowded with Gratia gazing out at the water while the squallers worked the winds and Sturmhan's crew managed the sails above. The mist was heavier than the day before. It clung thick against the water and crawled in damp tendrils over the ship's hull. The silence was broken only by Mal's directions and the orders Sturmhund called. When we entered a wide open stretch of sea, Mal turned to the Darkling and said, I think we're close.
You think?
Mal gave a single nod. The Darkling considered. If Mal was stalling, his efforts were doomed to be short-lived, and the price would be high.
After what felt like an eternity, the Darkling nodded to Sturmhund.
"Trim the sails," commanded the privateer, and the topmen moved to obey.
Ivan tapped the Darkling's shoulder and gestured to the southern horizon.
"A ship, moi sovereigni."
I squinted at the tiny smudge.
"Are they flying colors?" the Darkling asked Sturmhund.
"Probably fishermen," Sturmhund said. "But we'll keep an eye on her just in case."
He signaled to one of his crewmen, who went scurrying up the main royal with a long glass in hand. The longboats were prepared, and in minutes they were being lowered over the starboard side, loaded with Sturmhund's men and bristling with harpoons. The Darkling's Grisha crowded by the rail to view the boat's progress. The mist seemed to magnify the steady slap of the oars against the waves. I took a step toward Mal. Everyone's attention was focused on the man in the water. Only Genyo was watching me. She hesitated, then deliberately turned and joined the others at the railing. Mal and I faced forward, but we were close enough that our shoulders touched.
"Tell me you're all right," he murmured, his voice raw.
I nodded, swallowing the lump in my throat.
"I'm fine,"
I said softly.
"Is it out there?" "I don't know. Maybe. There were times when I was tracking the stag that I thought we were close, and... Alina, if I'm wrong..."
I turned then, not caring who saw us or what punishment I might receive. The mist was rising off the water now, creeping along the deck. I looked up at him, taking in every detail of his face, the bright blue of his irises, the curve of his lip, the scar that ran the length of his jaw. Behind him I glimpsed Tamar, scampering up the rigging, a lantern in her hands.
"None of this is your fault, Mal. None of it."
He lowered his head, setting his forehead against mine.
"I won't let him hurt you."
We both knew he was powerless to stop it, but the truth of that was too painful. So I just said,
"I know." "You're humoring me," he said with the hint of a grin.
"You require a lot of coddling." He pressed his lips to the top of my head.
"We'll find a way out of this, Alina. We always do."
I rested my iron-bound hands against his chest and closed my eyes. We were alone on an icy sea, prisoners of a man who could literally make monsters. And yet somehow I believed. I leaned into him, and for the first time in days, I let myself hope. A cry rang out.
2 points off the starboard bow!
As one, our heads turned, and I stilled. Something was moving in the mist, a shimmering, undulating white shape.
"Saints," Mal breathed.
At that moment, the creature's back breached the waves, its body cutting through the water in a sinuous arch, rainbows sparkling off the iridescent scales on its back.
Rusalia.
Chapter 4. Rusalia was a folk story, a fairy tale, a creature of dreams that lived on the edges of maps. But there could be no doubt. The ice dragon was real, and Mal had found it, just as he had found the stag. It felt wrong, like everything was happening too quickly, as if we were rushing towards something we didn't understand. A shout from the longboats drew my attention. A man on the boat nearest the sea whip stood up, a harpoon in his hand, taking aim. But the dragon's white tail lashed through the sea, split the waves, and came down with a slap, sending a rolling wall of water up against the boat's hull. The man with the harpoon sat down hard as the longboat tipped precariously, then righted itself at the last moment. Good, I thought. Fight them. Then the other boat let fly their harpoons. The first went wide and splashed harmlessly in the water. The second lodged in the sea whip's hide. It bucked,
tail whipping back and forth, then reared up like a snake, hurling its body out of the water. For a moment it hung suspended in the air, translucent wing-like fins, gleaming scales, and wrathful red eyes. Beads of water flew from its mane, and its massive jaws opened, revealing a pink tongue and rows of gleaming teeth. It came down on the nearest boat with a loud crash of splintering wood. The slender craft split in two, and men poured into the sea. The dragon's maw snapped closed over a sailor's legs, and he vanished, screaming beneath the waves. With furious strokes, the rest of the crewmen swam through the blood-stained water, making for the remaining longboat, where they were hauled over the side. I glanced back up to the whaler's rigging. The tops of the masts were shrouded in mist now, but I could still make out the light of Tamar's lantern burning steadily atop the main royal. Another harpoon found its target, and the sea whip began to sing, a sound more lovely than anything I'd ever heard, a choir of voices lifted in a plaintive, wordless song. No, I realized, not a song. The sea whip was crying out, writhing and rolling in the waves, as the longboats gave chase, struggling to shake the hooked tips of the harpoons free. Fight, I pleaded silently. Once he has you, he'll never let you go. But I could already see the dragon slowing, its movements growing sluggish as its cries wavered, mournful now, their music bleak and fading. Part of me wished the Darkling would just end it. Why didn't he? Why not use the cut on the sea whip and bind me to him as he had done with the stag?
Nets! Shouted Sturmhond.
But the mist had grown so thick that I couldn't quite tell where his voice was coming from. I heard a series of thunks from somewhere near the starboard rail.
Clear the mist, ordered the Darkling. We're losing the longboat.
I heard the Grisha calling to one another, and then felt the billow of squalor winds tugging at the hem of my coat. The mist lifted, and my jaw dropped. The Darkling and his Grisha still stood on the starboard side, attention focused on the longboat that now seemed to be rowing away from the whaler. But on the port side, another ship had appeared, as if from nowhere. A sleek schooner with gleaming masts and colors flying. A red dog on a teal field. And below it, in pale blue and gold, the Ravkin Double Eagle. I heard another series of thunks and saw steel claws studding the whaler's portside rail. Grappling hooks, I realized. And then everything seemed to happen at once. A howl went up from somewhere, like a wolf baying at the moon. Men swarmed over the rail onto the whaler's deck, pistols strapped to their chests, cutlasses in their hands, yowling and barking like a pack of wild dogs. I saw the Darkling turn, confusion and rage on his face.
What the hell is going on?
Mal said, stepping in front of me as we edged toward the meager protection of the mizzenmast.
I don't know, I replied. Something very good or something very, very bad.
We stood back to back, my hands still trapped in irons, his still bound, powerless to defend ourselves as the deck erupted into fighting. Pistol shots rang out. The air came alive with Inferni fire.
To me, hounds!
Sturman shouted and plunged into the action, a saber in his hands. Barking, yipping, snarling men were descending on the Darkling's Grisha from all sides, not just from the railing of the schooner, but from the rigging of the whaler as well.
Sturmhond's men.
Sturmhond was turning against the Darkling. The privateer had clearly lost his mind. Yes, the Grisha were outnumbered, but numbers didn't matter in a fight with the Darkling.
Look, Mal shouted.
Down in the water, the men in the remaining longboat had the struggling sea whip in tow. They had raised a sail, and a brisk wind was driving them, not toward the whaler, but directly toward the schooner instead. The stiff breeze that carried them seemed to come from nowhere,
I looked closer.
A crewman was standing in the longboat, arms raised.
There was no mistaking it. Sturmhand had a squaller working for him.
Suddenly an arm seized me around the waist, and I was lifted off my feet. The world seemed to upend itself, and I shrieked as I was thrown over a huge shoulder. I lifted my head, struggling against the arm that held me like a steel band, and saw Tamar rushing toward Mal, a knife gleaming in her hands.
"No!" I screamed. "Mal!"
He put his hands up to defend himself, but all she did was slice through his bonds. "Go!" she shouted, tossing him the knife and drawing a sword from the scabbard at her hip. Tolia clutched me tighter as he sprinted over the deck. Tamar and Mal were close behind.
"What are you doing?"
I squawked, my head jouncing against the giant's back.
"Just run," Tamar replied, slashing at a Korporalnik who threw himself into her path.
"I can't run," I shouted back. "Your idiot brother has me slung over his shoulder like a ham.
Do you want to be rescued or not?"
I didn't have time to answer.
"Hold tight," Tolia said. "We're going over."
I squeezed my eyes shut, preparing to tumble into the icy water. But Tolia hadn't gone more than a few steps when he gave a sudden grunt and fell to one knee, losing his grip on me. I toppled to the deck and rolled clumsily onto my side. When I looked up, I saw Ivan and a blue-robed Inferni standing over us. Ivan's hand was outstretched. He was crushing Tolia's heart, and this time Sturmhand wasn't there to stop him. The Inferni advanced on Tamar and Mal, flint in hand, arm already moving in an arc of flame. "Over before it began," I thought miserably. But in the next moment, the Inferni stopped and gasped. His flames died on the air.
"What are you waiting for?" Ivan snarled.
The Inferni's only response was a choked hiss. His eyes bulged. He clawed at his throat. Tamar held her sword in her right hand, but her left fist was clenched.
"Good trick," she said, swatting away the paralyzed Inferni's flint. "I know a good trick, too."
She raised her blade, and as the Inferni stood helpless, desperate for air, she ran him through with one vicious thrust. The Inferni crumpled to the deck. Ivan stared in confusion at Tamar standing over the lifeless body, her sword dripping blood. His concentration must have wavered, because in that moment, Tolia came up from his knee with a terrifying roar. Ivan clenched his fist, refocusing his efforts. Tolia grimaced, but he did not fall. Then the giant's hand shot out, and Ivan's face spasmed in pain and bewilderment. I looked from Tolia to Tamar, realization dawning. They were Grisha, Heartrenders.
"Do you like that, little man?"
Tolia asked as he stalked toward Ivan. Desperately, Ivan cast out another hand. He was shaking, and I could see he was struggling for breath. Tolia bobbled slightly but kept coming.
"Now we learn who has the stronger heart," he growled.
He strode slowly forward, like he was walking against a hard wind, his face beaded with sweat, his teeth bared in feral glee. I wondered if he and Ivan would both just fall down dead. Then the fingers of Tolia's outstretched hand curled into a fist. Ivan convulsed, his eyes rolled up in his head. A bubble of blood blossomed and burst on his lips. He collapsed onto the deck. Dimly, I was aware of the chaos raging around me. Tamar was struggling with a squalor. Two other Grisha had leapt onto Tolia. I heard a gunshot and realized Mal had gotten hold of a pistol. But all I could see was Ivan's lifeless body. He was dead. The Darkling's right hand, one of the most powerful Heartrenders in the Second Army. He'd survived the Fold and the Volcra, and now he was dead.
A tiny sob drew me out of my reverie. Jenya stood gazing down at Ivan, her hands over her mouth.
Jenya, I said.
Stop them! The shout came from across the deck. I turned and saw the Darkling grappling with an armed sailor.
Jenya was shaking. She reached into the pocket of her kefta and drew out a pistol.
Tolia lunged toward her.
No,
I said, stepping between them. I wasn't going to watch him kill Jenya.
The heavy pistol trembled in her hand.
Jenya, I said quietly, are you really going to shoot me?
She looked around wildly, unsure of where to aim. I laid a hand on her sleeve. She flinched and turned the barrel on me. A crack like thunder rent the air, and I knew the Darkling had gotten free. I looked back and saw a wave of darkness tumbling toward us. It's over, I thought. We're done for. But in the next instant, I glimpsed a bright flash and a shot rang out. The swell of darkness blew away to nothing, and I saw the Darkling clutching his arm, his face contorted in fury and pain. In disbelief, I realized he'd been shot. Sturmhand was racing toward us, pistols in hand.
Run, he shouted. Come on, Alina, Mal cried, reaching for my arm.
Jenya, I said desperately, come with us.
Her hand was shaking so badly, I thought the pistol might fly from her grip. Tears spilled over her cheeks.
I can't,
she sobbed brokenly. She lowered her weapon.
Go, Alina, she said. Just go.
In the next instant, Tolia had tossed me over his shoulder again. I beat futilely at his broad back.
No, I yelled. Wait!
But no one paid me any mind. Tolia took a running leap and vaulted over the railing. I screamed as we plummeted toward the icy water, bracing for the impact. Instead, we were scooped up by what could only have been a squaller wind and deposited on the attacking schooner's deck with a bone-jarring thud. Tamar and Mal followed, with Sturmhand close behind.
"Give the signal!"
Sturmhand shouted, springing to his feet. A piercing whistle blew.
"Privyet!"
he called to a crewman I didn't recognize.
"How many do we have?"
"8 men down," replied Privyet. 4 remaining on the whaler. Cargo on its way up."
"Saints!"
Sturmhand swore. He looked back to the whaler, struggling with himself.
"Musketeers!"
he shouted to the man on the schooner's main top.
"Lend them cover!"
The musketeers began firing their rifles down onto the deck of the whaler. Tolia tossed Mal a rifle, then slung another over his back. He leapt into the rigging and began to climb. Tamar drew a pistol from her hip. I was still sprawled on the deck, in an undignified tangle, my hands held useless in irons.
"Sea whip is secured, Capitan," shouted Privyet.
2 more of Sturmhand's men hurled over the whaler's railing and flew through the air, arms pinwheeling wildly to crash in a heap on the schooner's deck. 1 was bleeding badly from a wound to his arm. Then it came again, the boom of thunder.
"He's up!" yelled Tamar.
Blackness tumbled toward us, engulfing the schooner, blotting out everything in its path.
"Free me!" I pleaded. "Let me help!"
Sturmhand threw Tamar the keys and shouted,
"Do it!"
Tamar reached for my wrists, fumbling with the key as darkness rolled over us. We were blind. I heard someone scream, then the lock clicked free. The irons fell from my wrists and hit the deck with a dull clang. I raised my hands, and light blazed through the dark, pushing the blackness back over the whaler. A cheer went up from Sturmhand's crew, but it withered on their lips as another sound filled the air. A grating shriek, piercing in its wrongness. The creak of a door swinging open, a door that should have remained forever shut. The wound in my shoulder gave a sharp throb. Nichivoya. I turned to Sturmhand.
We have to get out of here, I said. Now.
He hesitated, battling himself. Two of his men were still aboard the whaler.
His expression hardened. Top men, make sail, he shouted. Squallers, due east.
I saw a row of sailors standing by the masts raise their arms and heard a whoomp as the canvas above us swelled with a hard driving wind. Just how many Grisha did the privateer have in his crew? But the darkling squallers had arranged themselves on the whaler's deck and were sending their own winds to buffet us. The schooner rocked unsteadily.
Portside guns, roared Sturmhand. Rolling broadside, on my signal!
I heard two shrill whistle blasts. A deafening boom shook the ship, then another and another, as the schooner's guns opened up a gaping hole in the whaler's hull. A panicked shout went up from the darkling ship. Sturmhan's squallers seized the advantage, and the schooner surged free. As the smoke from the cannons cleared, I saw a figure in black step up to the railing of the disabled whaler. Another wave of darkness rushed toward us, but this one was different. It writhed over the water as if it were clawing its way forward, and with it came the eerie clicking of a thousand angry insects. The darkness frothed and foamed like a wave breaking over a boulder and began to separate itself into shapes. Beside me, Mal muttered a prayer and lifted his rifle to his shoulder. I focused my power and slashed out with the cut, burning through the black cloud, trying to destroy the Nichivoya before they could take their full form. But I couldn't stop them all. They came on in a moaning horde of black teeth and claws. Sturmhan's crew opened fire. The Nichivoya reached the masts of the schooner, whirling around the sails, plucking sailors from the rigging like fruit. Then they were skittering down onto the deck. Mal fired again and again as the crewmen drew their sabers, but bullets and blades seemed only to slow the monsters. Their shadow bodies wavered and reformed, and they just kept coming. The schooner was still moving ahead, widening the distance between itself and the whaler. Not fast enough. I heard that shrieking moan, and another wave of shifting, slithering dark was headed toward us, already separating into winged bodies, reinforcements for the shadow soldiers. Sturmhand saw it too. He pointed to one of the squallers, still summoning wind to the sails.
Lightning! He shouted.
I flinched. He couldn't mean it. Squallers were never permitted to draw lightning. It was too unpredictable, too dangerous. And on open seas? With wooden ships.
But Sturmhan's Grisha didn't hesitate. The squallers clapped their hands together, rubbing their palms back and forth.
My ears popped as the pressure plummeted. The air crackled with current. We had just enough time to hurl ourselves to the deck as jagged bolts of lightning zigzagged across the sky. The new wave of Nichivoya scattered in momentary confusion.
Go! Sturmhan bellowed. Squallers at full!
Mal and I were thrown against the railing as the schooner shot forward. The sleek ship seemed to fly over the waves. I saw another black swell billow out from the side of the whaler. I lurched to my feet and braced myself, gathering my strength for another onslaught. But it did not come. It seemed there was a limit to the darkling's power. We'd edged out of his range. I leaned over the railing. The wind and sea spray stung my skin as the darkling's ship and his monsters disappeared from view. Something between a laugh and a sob racked my chest. Mal threw his arms around me, and I held tight, feeling the wet press of his shirt against my cheek, listening to the pounding of his heart, clinging to the unbelievable truth that we were still alive. Then, despite the blood they'd shed and the friends they'd lost, the schooner's crew broke into cheers. They whooped and hollered and barked and growled. In the rigging, Tolia,
lifted his rifle with one hand and